Welcome to the Together Podcast, powered by Xponential. The Together Podcast series highlights critical conversations on how church leaders can pursue the great collaboration together. We are all very familiar with the Great Commission and the challenge to go. There has been much taught on the Great Commandment and the need to go with love, but is it possible we've missed another great that Jesus also gave us? It's the Great Collaboration, calling us to go in love together. In this podcast, Xponential continues the multiplication conversation with a focus on the importance of collaboration, coming together as a body of believers to fulfill the mission of Jesus. Imagine the impact if North American churches came together to accomplish Jesus's mission. This podcast series focuses on five areas the church can come together on to accomplish true kingdom multiplication. And now, here's your host, Dave Ferguson.
We want to welcome you to another edition of the Xponential Podcast Series. I'm Dave Ferguson, president of the Xponential Conference. Thanks for joining us today and hanging out with me and my friend and pastor and author, Pete Cesaro. For over a decade, Pete's name has now become synonymous with words, really the phrase emotionally healthy, especially in the church. He and his wife are the co-founders of the global ministry Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, which I believe is in at least 25 different countries. Author of best-selling books like The Emotionally Healthy Church, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And we're particularly excited because he is going to be on the main stage in Orlando in March for our 2020 conference. Candidly, when we were putting together the lineup, Pete was one of the very first people I thought of when it came to our topic, which is this next year. It's called Together, the Great Collaboration. And we believe it starts with collaborating with God. But anyway, Pete, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be with you.
Hey, I'll tell you, before we do a deep dive into what I believe is one of the most vital conversations we could be having, maybe just a quick kind of update, anything you're currently working on or things you're currently excited about. I think people are always curious about that.
Yeah, well, actually, as you just even called me today and we're having this phone call, I'm actually working on a book called Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, and really thinking through what is the, you know, what are the core problems of, you know, our evangelical discipleship and leadership that's keeping us from a sustainable movement around the world and developing deeply changed disciples. And so it's been a really good exercise for me these last few months. I mean, it took me, I think, 4 to 5 months to write one chapter. You know, and it's going real slow, but it's going well. I mean, it's just really, really slow. But it's given me a lot of good time to think and ponder. And as you probably know, you know, when you do that kind of pondering, God does show up. It's just often much slower than I would like.
Well, I mean, I'm curious how, if this is, I mean, because this feels like your sweet spot, but it sounds like it's, but there's also kind of a struggle down this path. What's different about this that's really caused you to pause?
I think it's precision, Dave. I think it's, for example, I came to the conclusion recently that the challenge of where the culture is and where we are as a church in terms of disciple making is, it's the gulf is so large. In other words, what we're doing is so inadequate that we actually need like a new operating system that's going to really transform the whole way we do church if we're going to really impact the millennials and the Generation Zs that are going to follow them, looking at the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, that the way we've been doing church and leadership needs some significant changes and a seriousness of how we're actually engaging people within our churches for the sake of mission, that it's not a tweak. It's not like a little, let's add a program or let's just do a few more new things. And it's not as that, it's much, much bigger than that. And that requires, from us as leaders, a significant shift in how we're following Jesus ourselves. So I think that is that has been one of my big, I think, realizations, not dancing around it, but just going head on and saying, no, this is, the problem is so vast and large that it's going to take a new operating system, kind of like moving from Mac to to Windows, you know, or Windows to Mac, whatever your preference is.
Well, and I'll tell you, this really does, it speaks to kind of some things that we've been thinking about at Exponential. I was having a conversation with Todd Wilson. I know you're friends with Todd. Todd's the CEO at Exponential. And we feel like we're really getting some momentum on the church planting thing. We've seen the needle move over the last 4 or 5 years from 4% to 7%. But one of our fears in that is, you know, you can continue to kind of multiply things, but what are you exactly multiplying? And our fear is that we still haven't got this disciple-making thing figured out. And if we don't get that figured out, it's not going to matter.
Yes.
It's not going to matter how many brand-new churches we start. And, well, I'll tell you what, let's jump then, because I think what this topic is so important. Let's back up a little bit, because we're talking to leaders here, particularly a lot of church planting leaders. How do you define, for those who are brand new to this whole theme, how do you define emotionally healthy, and what are some of the markers of emotional health?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that two primary markers. One is a level of self-awareness of what's going on inside of you on the emotional end. In other words, that you're able to reflect on what's going on inside of you. You've slowed down enough for that in terms of what you're feeling, motivations, triggers. Are people experiencing you as a loving person, as an approachable, safe person? So all that whole arena, everything from grief and loss and limits, that whole self-awareness, emotional, and how your past impacts your present. So that's one large area. But the second is that you've slowed down so that you're doing for God is got a deep basis in being with Jesus. So your being with Jesus is sufficient to sustain your doing for Jesus. That's the second large component. So it's got two main aspects to it. And but I like to say, you know, if you're not emotionally mature, you can't be spiritually mature. That spiritual maturity and emotional maturity are inseparable. And I think Paul understood that at 1 Corinthians when he went after them, and especially in chapter 13 about, you know, loving and basically saying, if you're not approachable and soft and loving and agape is not flowing through you, doesn't matter how gifted, anointed, or powerful you are, how many churches you're planting,
right?
Paul says you're immature. So I would say that's a long answer to it.
No, that's good. I mean, if you use those kind of as markers, then, I mean, let's kind of reflect, and I don't know if this is true, but it seems to me that we do see more leaders, particularly, we'll just say church leaders and pastors, with emotional health issues. I mean, burning out, leaving ministry.
Yeah.
Moral failure, depression, even suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Am I just more aware of this, or is it really epidemic?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Dave, I don't know how long you've been doing this leadership thing, but I've been doing it over 40 years. And it's been going on for all 40 plus years that I've been a Christ follower. And I don't think it's new. I think it's actually a symptom of the way we're doing discipleship, which again, how we do discipleship is how we do leadership development. It all flows out of that. So, no, I think that we're more aware because of social media. It's coming to us much more quickly and in a more sensational form. But it's not new. In fact, just a few weeks before I was to get married, the pastor stepped down. I didn't have a person to marry. My wife and I, you know, we got married because he had stepped down of a scandal. And
oh,
it was
wow.
Like, I was like, so this has been dogging me from the very beginning. And so it's not new. People think it's, but it's not.
And I mean, I know a little bit of your story. Maybe some of our listeners don't. I mean, but this got birthed out of something personal for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't looking for this. I was, you know, church planting and planting multiple churches in New York City here, beginning in 1987, and hit a wall because it became very apparent that we were recycling the same old problems and we were not developing a healthy community. And then, of course, my own life wasn't going well. I got stuck. Got stuck in my own walk with Jesus and maritally. I had some gaps. And so out of all that, marriage not doing well, church struggling, even though we were growing numerically, hit a crisis. And it's out of that crisis that I finally said, okay, something's deeply wrong with all of my training. Something's really missing here. And I tried everything I knew to try to get at it and ended up leading into this thing we call now today emotionally healthy discipleship. And so it's been like it's been a 20, you know, 25 year journey of trying to dig into this missing component. I'm not saying this is the only component of discipleship, because it's not. It's just a central missing one that within all, because what we're good at, Dave, as evangelicals is we are good at doing, and that's it, and we need to do. I think we're missional. That's the heart of God. God loves the world. and we love the world. And we need to develop a whole new tens of thousands of churches for the next generation. I mean, every generation has got to be planting tens of culturally relevant. And so it's critically important. But what we're weak at is things like silence and stillness and reflection. These are real weaknesses in our wing of the church. And that's why it's so critical that we learn from the larger church and the historical church about things like silence and stillness and Sabbath and slowing down, so that, you know, we've got an activity, it's got a robustness to it, a maturity to it, a depth to it, and people are actually being deeply changed by Jesus, we're not just getting people to sit in a pew.
Right.
And do things for us.
I know personally, we've had some fun with this, but it's also funny because it's true. I am a doer. Give me a checklist. Give me kind of a goal. I like to accomplish it. And I think a lot of leaders are like that. And I'm just, what's your observation? Do church leaders today, they recognize that they're burning out and don't know what to do about it? Or do most of them just not take time to cultivate self-awareness?
Yeah, I think it's hard to see it. We're like fish swimming in the ocean, you know, we're just surrounded by it. Everything in Western culture is, our worth is in what we do, what we've accomplished, what we've produced. And so we've just taken that in the church. And so then our leadership is doing machines. And I don't think people really think about it. They're exhausted. I mean, pastors saying I'm tired, that's the norm. What's different is, I think there is a level of exhaustion and tiredness that people are asking a new set of questions. But no, it's a massive problem. And I think, Dave, you're not unique. It is so prophetic and countercultural and radical to actually slow down to be. Let's just take the first simplest act of taking a Sabbath for a 24-hour period each week. For a 24-hour period as a spiritual practice to stop, rest, delight, you know, in Jesus, and delight in the miracle of life, but no work. I'm just being, you know, for a day, or a 24-hour period. For me, it's Friday night to Saturday night, 6 to 6. And
so you do a Friday night starting at 6 to Saturday night at 6?
I do. Look,
can I just get real specific? Because I'm curious about this too. Because actually, my wife and I've been talking about something very similar to this. So, like, I find, okay, so you work your 5 days, okay, then let's say you do get a day or 2 days off, but it feels like sometimes your day off is actually just doing stuff, all the stuff you didn't do at home, doing that. So, like, you're six to six. I mean, are you paying the bills, mowing the yard, whatever it is, those kind of stuff?
No, I'm not. Eugene Peterson calls it a day off is a bastard Sabbath. because it has the elements of a Sabbath, but it's not a Sabbath. A Sabbath is to the Lord your, and it's got certain elements to it that make it a Sabbath. And those elements are, we actually stop our work, paid and unpaid. So I have unpaid work in life to do, things like mowing the lawn and things like paying the bills and, you know, going shopping for food. And so I've got to do that other times of the week too. And so you probably need a day off, or most, or at least a half or three quarters of a day off to get the unpaid work of life done.
Right.
And then my paid work is I'm pastoring vocationally.
Right.
So whether it's writing or EH discipleship or church, I'm not doing that either. I'm not doing the phone calls and all that stuff. And so I build into that day, just like, you know, it's been going on in Judaism for 3,500 years. I create a container that makes this 24-hour period different than the rest. And I trust God. He's running the world. He's running the church. The world will go on just fine when we're dead, Dave, you know, and we're headed for an eternal Sabbath rest. When we see him face to face, and every week we get to taste eternity and Sabbath. But again, we actually think we're so indispensable that, you know, God needs us 7 days a week, and it's unbiblical and it's just untrue. But Sabbath is, I would say, the first core spiritual practice to slow down that to be built into people's lives.
Just, I mean, to really give people a real close picture. Okay, so like your wife's Jerry, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you and Jerry got a 6 to 6, 6 on Friday, 6 on Saturday. And I hate to say it this way, so forgive me, because I don't know how else to say it. So you're Sabbathing, but what are you doing?
No. That's a good question.
You know what I mean? Because you're doing, you're resting. I know that's the do, but what does that look like? I mean, I think, like, give us a snapshot. I mean, and I'm sure there's times you don't get it right. When you're getting it right, what's that look like?
Yeah, I mean, so it has to be thought about. It has to be planned. And So, and again, in ancient Judaism, this is the most important day of the week, and all the work flows out of it. So it is thought about. And I like the image of a container. I create a container around it. So for us, it may look something simple as, I'll just talk about last weekend. You know, last weekend, on our Sabbath, it was Friday. In the daytime, we left our house at noon, and we went to a play, went to Manhattan, and we did a long walk in Central Park. Then we went to a little place to eat, and then we went to a play that night, which I'd planned. You know, came home, got home pretty late from that play, slept in. And the next day had a nice long breakfast. Our kids are now grown out of the house. We went for another walk. Met some friends that night for dinner, and just kind of hung out and just laughed and chatted. And, we did some reading in the afternoon. But, we knew the Friday was going to be a big – going to a play was a big energy. We're out from 12 noon to 12 midnight. We were like, okay, that was a long time. And there was no – we weren't going to rush out and do anything on Saturday. But we're going to plan an activity. We'll leave the city and go hiking, for example. We love nature, so we're going to go hiking on good days. If it's snowing, we'll do some cross country skiing. But we're thinking through how do we get out of New York, get to beauty, get to nature, get to people that give us energy. But we're very thoughtful about what are we going to do this week.
And, so you guys actually sit down and go like, okay, hey, let's plan out the next couple Sabbaths. What are we going to do to rest? To replenish.
Yeah, we may go separate ways sometimes. I'll go to I love libraries and bookstores. I'll go to a museum. And again, Jerry's a big outdoors person. I'm an outdoors person, but she's a super outdoors person. And so, but we're very thoughtful. What's going to replenish our soil? What's going to and be again completely as much removed from anything that's considered that's our vocational work, which is church and. And the ministry. So it's a wonderful. Once you taste it, you can't go back because you realize you were made for it. You were actually wired to have a rhythm of work and Sabbath, not work and vacation, but work and Sabbath. And we actually treat our vacations as Sabbaths, as longer sabbaticals. So Christmas, for example, I know you're all working hard for Christmas,
right.
But you want to take, a little longer, a Sabbath after Christmas, and probably a 2 or 3 days, but treat it as, again, we have four principles: stop, rest, delight, contemplate. Stop. That's built into the Hebrew word.
Yep.
Stop your, whatever your work is, you rest. So you're resting from things like maybe media, it may be multitasking, it's setting goals. We don't talk about difficult issues. If we got to make hard decisions, we don't talk about it on Sabbath. It's Sabbath. We don't talk about that. Let's talk about it tomorrow,
Okay.
And yeah, so and then we delight. The key thing is what the Pharisees missed was that Sabbath was meant to be a delight. And Jesus says, you were not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for you. Mark 2:27. And again, we're not saved by prayer. We're not saved by Bible study. We're not saved by Sabbath. We're saved by Jesus alone and his righteousness and his finished work on the cross. But there are certain spiritual practices that are core formational practices for a disciple, like prayer and Bible study and local church and worship and Sabbath. Sabbath is a core spiritual practice. And so that's one of the big elephants in the room for us as, church planters and a movement like Exponential is that we don't have time for Sabbath because we're planting churches. And so that's something's wrong here. It's like saying I'm so busy, I don't have time to pray or read scripture because I'm preaching sermons. It's like you're missing something here.
But I'll tell you what, to be honest, I mean, to hear you explain it practically, though, I mean, like, it's very specifically, like, we go to a play, we go out to dinner, we sleep in, we have breakfast, and then we go for a walk, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm getting, like, a little bit of an adrenaline rush on the other side of the mic here. because sometimes practice and spiritual disciplines, it feels like a have to, right? I mean, what you just describes, like, a tremendous grace. It goes like, oh, my goodness. I mean, it just... Like, I mean, viscerally right now, just hearing you talk about it, it feels good.
Well, like I said, if it's a should or a have to, it doesn't belong on Sabbath.
Yeah. But I'm just saying the whole Sabbath thing doesn't,
tremendous.
It feels like a grace.
It's such a grace because you don't have, you're off the throne. Like God's actually, Jerry likes to say it like this for herself. She goes, I'm probably the most Christian on Sabbath because I'm actually living in the grace of the gospel. I'm doing nothing and God loves me.
Yes.
I'm accomplishing nothing and I'm experiencing the love of God. And it really is a lived gospel time. That's why, you know, I was always worried. I got into this probably 15, 20 years ago. I was worried, oh, it's going to become legalism for people. And I realized, no, it never does, because it's all about grace. Like you said, it's a wonder. And think about God on the first, when he first creates the Sabbath, he creates the creation in 6 days, and the last day, he says, this is beautiful. This is delightful on the first Sabbath. And that word is delight. And so it built into the fabric of God and the first Sabbath and this rhythm is the world is a miracle. The world is beautiful. And it's given to us as a gift to enjoy. And you know, I don't live in a beautiful place, New York City, but so many people I travel, they live in beautiful places like, you know, Colorado and California. But you can go to, you know, mountain climbing or whatever. But if you don't do it unto the Lord, it's not a Sabbath. You with me? I'm going to the mountains to hike, but I'm receiving a gift from God. It created this beauty. And it's just wonderful. It's just, I don't know how people live without it. But I think we talk about being and so that we do out of our being, it does require a slowing down. I think Sabbath is where I'll start with the pastor. Just like, let's get this straight in your life.
That's super helpful. I'll tell you what, for leaders who are listening in and maybe they're wanting to do kind of their own kind of quick self-check. I mean, what are kind of the warning signs that you're lacking emotional health, that you're close to burnout? What are the warning signs?
You find yourself comparing yourself a lot to other people.
Okay.
You're triggered easily. You're impatient. There's a sense your cup is not overflowing. You feel like you're, you know, it's not an empty, but there's enough in there to keep going, gasoline, but it's not good. Your marriage, your spouse, if you're married, just ask your spouse, how are you, you know, and that'll tell you a lot about the pace of your life and how it's going. You're not doing feelings. You haven't done much work on your past and how it's impacting your present. You don't do grief and loss because you don't have time. So you skim over it and end up medicating on different issues. You do more than you can. You don't have a sense of limits, embracing God's gift of limits. So you're trying to take on more than you can actually do. And so you're always hurried and rushed. People don't experience you as present. It's because you're not present because you're too busy to be present. You got too much on your mind. And you're not a great – people would not describe you as a great listener. Because again, you just got too much you're doing. The list goes on, Dave. I would encourage your listeners, there's a free little assessment, you know, am I an emotional infant, child, adolescent, or adult? And you take them 15.
Yeah, where do they find that?
Go to emotionallyhealthy.org /mature. It's on the front page of the website, but take it. It's 15 minutes. And am I an emotional infant, child, adolescent, or adult? And it'll touch on some of the categories I just mentioned to you. And it'll give you a good sense of where you are. But if you want to take it and actually like let God come to you, like stop. And like if you do poorly, then you say, okay, God, how are you coming to me through this? What adjustments are you asking me to make? What shifts in the way that I'm following you are you inviting me to? Because God's inviting us, right, to himself and to follow him wherever he leads and however he leads. So, yeah, I would check that out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that's particularly great advice for probably the group of listeners here, because, I mean, basically with our church planters, you kind of have the entrepreneurs of the kingdom and who are so wired for doing, for task, for accomplishment. But at the same time, I think we also have to remember that we want to be in this for the long haul, that there's good things like this that God has for us, and we're going to reproduce this in the lives of all of our leaders and all of our peoples and all the churches we start. And so this really is something that's mission critical.
And let me just speak to all you church planners
Please
out
do.
There and those listening, because it's what you're doing is wonderful. And I want to just – we're with you. We, you know, Dave and I are a little bit older than you. We love you. You know, we're behind you 100%. But what you're doing is incredibly challenging. I mean, like – to actually have to be the message that you're preaching while you're leading and building. In other words, we're not talking about going and you know, work in a library or lead a retreat center or go be a therapist. We're talking about leading a community of people, leading a church that's missional, while at the same time being with Jesus and having a deep walk with him. And you can say to people, follow me as I follow Christ. So I think we often underestimate what's your first job, and that's a massive task. So this is gonna take you a while to learn this. It's okay, you're making mistakes, you're falling, but these are gifts from God to grow you into a mature man, a mature woman. And but this is a big task. Like it's not like you should know this. No, this is incredibly challenging. But you want to be aware. We're not running an MBA program here.
Right.
You know, we're not building a corporation or a business. We're building the church of the living God.
Yes.
And that's a whole nother level of leadership. It's very different than secular leadership because it's grounded in Jesus. So if you look at church history, this has been a challenge for 2,000 years. And just see yourself as you're learning, not just how to plant a church. You're learning how to be a mature man and woman of God who can lead. And that is your first role. And your second is then lead out of that in this church planting venture you're involved in.
That's awesome. Thanks for that, Pete. I'll tell you what, for those listening in, our theme for 2020 is called Together, the Great Collaboration. We feel like the collaboration part is what's been missing from the mission of Jesus, us working together. And the challenge we're going to give to leaders there is either to join a network or start a network. But one of our fears in putting that out there is that with these type A kind of driven apostolic entrepreneurial leaders, we're going to jump straight to the network piece. And as we unfold this model that we want to share with people about the great collaboration starts with you being in community with God. Before you can create a community of God's people, you have to be in community with God. And so that's why we asked Pete to be our first speaker in our first session, as he's going to talk about what it means for us to be together with God. Because where we can never think anything about networks and expand the kingdom that way, that's where it starts. It starts with us being, in Pete's own language, emotionally healthy leaders. So, Pete, I want to say thank you. This is such a critical conversation for the church and ultimately for the kingdom. And I just want to say thanks for committing your life to church leaders and using your experience to help others. And thanks for being with us today.
Dave, thank you for everything you're doing. And it's a privilege. And thanks for the opportunity to be with you.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll see you in Orlando.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Want to go deeper into this great collaboration conversation? If so, check out the Together Resource Library. This free resource library gives you access to dozens of articles, 10-plus videos from Dave Ferguson and Patrick O'Connell, access to the free Together training kit, free ebooks, and many more free resources. You can check out this vast library for collaboration at exponential.org/together-resources/.